Good Monday morning, everyone. The 12 Days of Paige Turners is coming to an end. Tonight is December 11th, so you're going to want to tune in before the 12th day when all the authors come back and talk about their promotions. But you guys listening to Author Talk with me, Amy, Russell, and Valerie. Joel could not make it with us this morning. So it's just us three going to have a group conversation about everything that's kind of been going on. So this weekend, because that's how we always kick off our show, let me just tell you that the plague has hit my house again. Oh. I am covered in strep of different forms. My daughters have strep of the throat. My husband had strep that was on his body, which was the weirdest thing to see. And I find the humor in everything. I was the last to go down. I wasn't. All of my tests came back negative, but I started developing symptoms. So I'm on an antibiotic as a precaution starting on Saturday. But I make fun of my husband because he had like the rash and the scabs kind of all over his body. So he looked like, I always said, like a meth head that picks his skin. So whenever he would itch, I'd been like, stop tweaking. Okay. Just slap it, knock it off. Okay. So now that's all better. His flawless skin is back that we all hate in my household. And he's, you know, back to being normal. But we also took the girls to see Santa. So this year they're really into Santa. Mm-hmm. And we got to go on Saturday night. We went and they were there. And they were so excited. And Skye's over here yelling, I'm so excited to see Santa. Because she's my like really vocal outgoing one. And then when it came time to see Santa, she was the most shy. Wouldn't talk to him. Nothing. But hey, I got a photo and that's
no tears, no tears.
I had no tears, but we did like a hay ride and they like pulled us through these lights. So it was at a nursery, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. And they pulled us through the lights and everything. And Skye,
maybe that's what got everybody sick. That nasty hay ride with all those other nasty kids.
We were sick before this. It was really just like a trailer. There wasn't hay on it. But Skye would like go and like stand where the seat is to the trailer, you know, like the bed of the truck. And then there's like the hitch, the trailer. And like, it was like she was like captaining this whole trailer. And she was just screaming and like singing Jingle Bells. And it was like the cutest thing in the world. She's popping in right now on my vent. But that it was the sweetest thing. And they're really into Santa this year. So it's been a fun but sick weekend, I guess. So what did everybody else do this weekend?
Go ahead, Valerie.
What did we do this weekend? What else? Well, yesterday was really fun. I have a group of friends I've been friends with probably for, oh my gosh, like almost 15 years or so. And we get together still and go to.
Since you were 10, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so, but we got together for our Christmas event yesterday. And what's so funny, and it always makes me so happy because these people have no filter. We're just like all over the place and, you know, standing up in the restaurant, toasting everybody. And so we're those annoying people you see in the restaurant sometimes, a little extra loud, a little having too much fun, but who cares?
That was pretty good. That was a pretty good story for nothing in the weekend.
Yeah. And then I did a market and I survived. We were all sitting out there at the market and we're like, hey, there's some rain coming. And it says heavy rain in 15 minutes. We're all like, man, you should have seen us. We were like going crazy. But did you have any crazy weather where you are, Russell?
Unlike Houston, it is cold as heck here.
Well, see, that's I'm wearing flannel today because it is cold here.
That's why I'm not out in the forest because in the 30s here. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in the 40s high. This is when I love Georgia. Georgia is seasonal and it gets cold, so you can wear your good looking winter clothes. And all the women are wearing their fashion boots now. Yes. So I like it.
Yes.
So are you finished?
Your butt off. It's freeze your butt off here though, Russell. It was 28 this morning when I woke up.
There was ice on my plants and they didn't say anything about cover your plants. And I was like, I'm so angry. If half of my things that I worked all summer to survive the drought and now they die from one day of frost, I'm going to be so upset.
If you didn't, do you have plumeria? If you didn't bring your plumeria in, you're screwed.
No. Okay. But I did have a nice little pumpkin plant growing with full squash blossoms, and I was, you know, enjoying eating them. But now they're probably like.
So this is my weekend. So Friday, Melinda said, "Oh, I have to give a presentation this afternoon school. Would you like to go? I said, sure. Yeah. That would be great. So I went, and her company was giving 100 laptops to the school, to the children. And it was a packed audience. And when she first got up, people looked at her, were looking at her like, you know, who's this businesswoman? They didn't really care. And by the end of it, she had engaged the entire audience. And everyone cheered and was laughing at her speech. I was so proud of her. It was pretty impressive to see your spouse do something like that.
Heck, I love it.
So yes. I was very proud about that. And then I hurt my shoulder playing pickleball.
Oh, no.
And went to the doctor. And that's why today I need to tell the audience, I may sound a little weird because I'm on both pain pills and muscle relaxers.
Oh.
So if Russell's a little chill or a little weird, please give me an ounce of compassion. Not more than that. I don't want any more compassion than that. Because I'm just a little bit cool.
So did you pull it like or land on it or what?
I don't know. This is the fourth time I'm broken. I don't know. Pickleball is a ridiculous, though, getting to be extremely popular sport.
Yeah.
And my wife has gone pickleball crazy, so we play all the time. And I have twisted an ankle, twisted a wrist, got tennis elbow, and yes. Now this shoulder. I'm just breaking. It's weird.
I take those as signs that you just need to do a new sport.
And I think that's a great idea, Amy, a new sport.
Yeah.
My wife and I, it's part of our social life. I can't give it up. Plus, she's crazy about it. She loves it. She just doesn't break. Yeah. I was lucky I married a younger woman, I guess.
Yes. See, I'd be the one breaking because I'm very accident prone. So yeah, they're like basically wrap me in bubble wrap because
I kind of believe that you look accident prone.
I try so hard to not do, you know, be very cautious and aware. And then the most random things happen. You're just like, boom, oh, I just fell. Or something like I was carrying some branches. Stupid of me, but I carried them all in front of me when I was taking them to the trash, missed the step, you know, even though I know where the step is, landed on both my knees. And I was like,
oh, that hurts.
You know, and it's just you're like in your own zone and then you don't realize that something's going to happen just out of your control. And that's probably what happened in pickleball. You were probably in the zone, right?
No, I was trying to slam the ball at someone's feet to win the point.
I thought you were going to slam it at their face.
I do that, but it's not as effective on tall people. One of the tricks against tall people is you hit them on their feet. They can't. Mm-hmm. It's harder for them to react to. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's funny to watch, which is the most important part. Well, so I have to thank the people listening.
Take a trip and watch him play pickleball. That would be.
That's what I was thinking.
We play in Houston all the time.
Oh, my God. We should see.
I need to thank the people listening to us on our podcast during the week. Most people don't watch us when we do this live on Monday mornings. Monday mornings. They watch us during the week on the way to work, while they're working out. We want to thank them. Amy, even I can find us on our podcast since you have tweaked everything. Where can they find us?
Yeah. So you guys, if Russell can find us, literally you can find us. So you can find us anywhere that you can listen to a podcast. Amazon, Apple, Google, Spotify, Good Pods. There's several others out there that I'm not even mentioning. Type in Author Talk. Look for Crimson, Red, and Gold. And that is us. You can go and hear all of our episodes. From day one, we've been doing this 8 years, either total of 8 years or coming up on 8 years. Me and Russell always get confused. It's been a really long time. And we do it every Monday. And if like this year, Christmas is on a Monday and we will still be doing a show. We're gearing up to have it recorded, but it still will be going out to you guys on Christmas Day. We do not miss Mondays. But to reiterate what Russell said, we have had so much fun doing this, met so many amazing, incredibly talented writers and others within the writing community, publishers, graphic design artists, all kinds. And so we're incredibly humbled to be in the
top. And 10. One pop music singer from Great Britain.
Yes, that is true. So we have had so many amazing people on, and we just feel incredibly grateful and humbled by being in the top 10 for indie podcasts and just been having a lot of fun and meeting amazing people. So speaking of amazing authors and everything, you guys all know and have been joining us for the ride of the 12 Days of Page Turners. Today is day 11, and it is our closing ceremonial event tonight at 7 p.m. We have the last round of authors speaking to us. One will be a publisher talking about all of their authors and their holiday promotions that they have going on this year. Tomorrow is the 12th. We generally do a live event mid-afternoon and have whoever can come back on to talk about their promotions, come and talk with us. Well, this year we're doing things differently. So this year, every night, I have recorded all of the presentations. And so tonight, after our live show at 7, I will be splicing and putting everybody's promotion that has participated this year into a video that we will air multiple times on the 12th. So that way you can hear all of these authors talk about their holiday promotions one more time, and they all get to do it. Because the time zones that we're playing with people, I mean, I'm not a math person, and time zones are quite difficult. So instead of doing that, I wanted to give everybody the opportunity to talk about it again. So I will be busy doing that tonight, and those will be up tomorrow. So make sure that if you don't make it tonight, you tune in tomorrow to hear all of the holiday specials. These amazing authors, just like Valerie Sweden, yes, that joined us this year, have, and take advantage of it. Because we all know and support and love authors and know that the best gift you can give anyone is a book this holiday season. Escape from reality, learn something new, dive in to a whole new author arena or whatever fits your fancy. I love psychological thrillers, so I will be diving into those. So it's one of those things. But remember to also go and leave, if you take advantage of these, the author's reviews, good or bad. It makes them stronger writers, and it gives them that nudge to continue writing. So that's my spiel on readers.
I like it. But now tell us what's funny's happened since last Monday.
There has been several things. So you guys know I get so excited and I get all dressed up, and we did red this year, right? Mm-hmm. So I've gone through, who knew that there were multiple shades of red lipstick? I've gone through several red lipsticks. I have my red blue light filter glasses, mm-hmm, everything like that. But well, after doing it for so long, things start to fade a little bit. I get a little tired. And well, I came back on because I had one of the authors couldn't make it, and I had done a recording. I forgot to unmute myself. So I'm sitting here ending the show completely muted. And then, you know, at that point, you're thoroughly embarrassed because I'm the one person that always remembers to unmute, and I did not. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I went to take a sip out of my tea one night to kind of give me that extra little energy. It was unsweetened. And if anybody knows me, I am a true Southern girl and I love sweet tea. And so I make a really nasty face in one of my videos, and it wasn't directed towards the author at all. It was towards my tea. Okay. And then one of these other ones, and I'm thoroughly embarrassed. When we ended that night, I had her stay so I could apologize. We're talking about her age and how, like, you still had to put the mail in the mail, like, post box kind of carrier thing. And I told her I was thinking about her previous statement. Like, my brain hadn't caught up with what she just said. And I, like, reiterated. So, like, affirming, you know, that her age, and that making the assumption that she was old, and that was not my intent at all. So I felt awful. And I'm in the chat like, I'm so sorry. That's not what I was saying. I was responding to this one. And so it's been a hot mess this past week.
So you only made three mistakes? I would say in all those hours of podcasting, three mistakes is not bad.
That is not bad.
Okay, they're Amy live Queen shows, you guys. Like, they're live in time shows. And most of these people I haven't met before. So we had a lot of people I'd never met, didn't know who I and was. Amy, so to make these is mortifying
for Amy, me. Every episode, don't you have like 4 to 5 authors? So it's a lot. There's a lot of people, you know, and then just hearing all their stories and their different genres and their backgrounds and all these things. And it's so inspiring and everything. So it's a lot. It's a lot to do. And is it like 1 hour, right?
Yeah. I mean, some of them have gone over. But Valerie, the point, first impressions matter. And absolutely, my first impression with this lady is that I was, you know, agreeing that she was old, and that's not my intent. I felt so bad. Like, these things haunt me at night, you guys. Like, they go through
the same way. I am the same way. I can say like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that. And then I'll be thinking about it for like 3 days. Like, why did I say that? Or why did I
know?
That?
And then, you know, by the end of that, you're in tears because you're just like, I'm so sorry. Yeah. No, it's a whole thing.
Did she even care? Did she understand it? Did she hear it?
I tell myself that she just found humor in it. So we go.
Oh, so
that.
You don't know actually how she feels about it. That's funny.
No, I actually have no idea at all. But hey, Joel just popped on. Hey, Joel.
Oh wow.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I drove all the way downtown to my office this morning thinking I will definitely have internet at my office this morning, only to not have internet and just spent 15 minutes on with the text to get internet. So this is completely on me. My apologies.
Hey, it happens. That's what we love the most about live shows, because you having internet problems is not nearly as bad as me having my 3- and 4-year-old come in or scream at the bottom of the door.
Actually, Joel, it's way funnier when her 3-year-old comes in screaming at her during the show. makes some of the best shows.
Yeah, that's way better than Joel and his, you know, non-functional Canadian internet. So
exactly.
It's Monday. It's all good.
It's all good. If you know, your internet was still on the weekend mode. So it's all good. And clearly. It rolls in with our show because we can sit here and make fun of it because that's just how we roll.
Yeah, I'm happy to play the victim for the duration of the show now. It's all good.
No, it is all good. So, Joel, what did you do this weekend? We all had crazy, sick, adventurous, proud weekends. So what did you do?
Well, I was traveling for work last week for 3 days and then came home and promptly got hit by a stomach virus. So I had 2 days in bed. And today is my first day out of bed. So I had one of those weekends where I was coming home, looking forward to being productive on the home front after being away for a few days, and was completely non-productive. And so I also have to fix that issue when I get home later today. So that's where I'm at. But the good news is I'm not sick right now. So I'm going to take that as a win.
Hey, there you go. You feed into my weekend because I always say the plague. I had the plague of strep in multiple forms hit my house this past
week. Joel, she has daycare disease is what she has.
Oh, we've got that too. I've got a 9- and a 6-year-old. And I have to admit, getting sick on the weekend was a bit of a win because it was the first time I've had a virus this fall. And usually as soon as the kids hit the school, we're just nailed with it like every week. So yeah, not bad, all things considered. Yeah.
This is my 7th go round this year with strep. So we have an ENT visit in our future is what I've decided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody's going to come. The teacher's going to send somebody over to see, did they clean right? What's wrong with these people?
I know. I need to hire like professional cleaners or something. Like it's just not, working. Whatever it is that I'm doing, it's just not working.
You know what? Don't feel too bad. I had 2 awful cases of strep myself earlier this year that the kids brought home, and I haven't had strep since I was a kid. And so I was in my specialist too saying like, what is going on here? Like, do I need to get my tonsils removed? And that's what he told me. He said, one more time, Makai, and then we're taking you in for surgery. So,
That's crazy. See, I've never had it. I'm 31. I've never had it until this year. And I've had it like 3 times because of my oldest daughter. She's one that's had it 7 times. So it's a beast, and it's different every time. Every time it's different. It's not fun.
Boy, am I glad, Valerie. Aren't we glad we're not around
these
people?
I was just thinking that same thing. Yes, when we got out of elementary school, it's like a whole nother world. You're like, wait, I don't have to go to the pediatrician again. Especially after like January, after everybody comes back from the holidays, and then that everybody's sick again, and then or they're sick right about like the beginning of September because they've already been in school, and you're like, not again. And then you just go the whole round. It just goes back.
I'm gonna hold out. You give me hope.
No, my daughter used to get sick all the time. That when we go see the pediatrician, she's like, "Oh, you're back. The sinus infection queen or something." She was giving her such a hard time all the time, and it was strep, and we had bronchitis, and just so much.
Can we quit talking about sick kids?
I'm
tired of talking. I want to talk about Joel.
Joel is much more fascinating. Absolutely.
I have a question for Joel before Valerie starts asking about his books. And that is, I see that you've done a lot of non-fictional writing. You've done like journalist work, right?
Yeah.
So how long has it been that you wanted to actually write novels? And how did your family react to it when you said, oh, I'm gonna take another section of the time I have with you out and I'm gonna start writing this too?
Well, I took the wrong path, I'm starting to realize, in life. So my parents would say Joel is, you know, successful and he's done well. But I knew when I was 12 that I wanted to be a novelist. And I started writing simply because it wasn't cool anymore to play with action figures, but I still had stories in my head. And so I finished my first novel by the time I was 14. It was terrible. And I just got disillusioned as a teenager. Like I was listening to voices that were saying, you're never going to get any income if you try and pursue arts as a career. You need to have something that's more structured.
Those voices were your mother.
Yeah, and family members. And yeah, totally. You know, career counselors in high school are not, you know, they're great people, but they're not really encouraging you to pursue Pulp Fiction as a career. And so I went to, I did my thing. And eventually I went back to university when I was 21 and studied journalism because I thought journalism would lead to maybe like contacts in publishing. It doesn't, which I learned. So I had a fairly successful career as a journalist and then moved into public relations and then moved into economic development. So weird path. And it was only when I got into this role, and my role now is sort of entirely people, that I finally had the need, I think, an outlet to write again, because I wasn't writing all day long, and got into fiction, what I really want to write. So it's a really roundabout journey to get back to what I always wanted to do. And I think too, I hit, you know, I've got two daughters and I've hit my late 30s, and I'm just like, you know what, like, I don't want to wait anymore to do what I really want to do. So I'm doing both. And my wife is excellent. She's very supportive of me doing both, so long as I, you know, fit it in hours that I'm not needed for other things. So, you know, early mornings, late at night, lunch breaks is kind of when I'm, you know, trying to get words on the page. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you transitioned from a journalist to doing what you're doing, and then public relations, and then into this career, and then while still writing. So how did the writing process evolve through all of this? Did you have the ideas like in the back of your mind, or what happened?
Because I did.
This last year, right?
Yeah. So I was trying desperately while I was in public relations and I wasn't writing journalism anymore. And then when I got into this role, to figure out writing, but I was really missing some pieces. So like structurally I can do journalism. Like I get that. I can do news reporting. I can do in-depth stuff. I can do social issues features. I can do crime. I can do business. That's sort of what I'm formally trained in. But what I struggled with was a lot of that doesn't really translate to fiction at all. So when I started getting back into it, like I didn't understand how to write conflict. I didn't understand basic story structures. And so I went back and I did like a number of online courses. I read a bunch of books. I started doing like writing prompts just to figure out story structure. And then COVID hit in 2020. And like everybody else, you know, I was stuck at home for the better part of 6 months, leading my team here from afar. And there's a lot of stress with that. Mm-hmm. And I just needed an outlet. And I was stuck in our little, you know, makeshift office at home for that period of time. And so I think two things came together. COVID kind of gave me the time and structure I needed to actually get at it. And then by that point I had been doing sort of fiction writing courses online and learning a bit more about it enough to actually write something that is, I won't call it complete garbage. So then things have sort of progressed from there. And, but it took a long time. Like what a road and what a learning for me that like one type of writing is not like the other. And I still won't claim to be, you know, a master at it by any stretch.
It is. It's a process. It's, and Russell and I both have done it. Russell, can you relate to that too?
Yes. I got to tell you, it. I'm sure this happens to you, Joel. You write something, you think it's, when you finish, you almost have tears because you think it's so much better than anything you've ever written. And then you wake up the next morning and erase it. Have you done that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an awful, awful thing. Yeah. I once told my oldest son, who's too much like his father, after one of those days, Will, I've written the best stuff I've ever written. And my son, who's very streetwise, says, I'll wait till tomorrow to hear that. Because again, by tomorrow, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's true, right? Like, there's entire stories I've written that I really liked and then went back to them. And then for whatever reason, I'm just like, no, that's never going to see the light of day. And you know what? I don't regret writing it. And that's another thing that I've come to sort of, I think it's a nascent thought for me, but it's one that's developing, is that not all of your art needs to be published with, you know, like a publisher's name on it and sell copies for it to be valued or justified. Like the actual act of creating is the art in and of itself, even if it, some of the stuff never sees readers' eyes whatsoever, there's still value in it. Sometimes there was a story I wrote that, like, I tend to write genre fiction, but I wrote something that was really meaningful to me last year. It was a short story. It was about a character and the relationship with her father, and it mirrored a lot of stuff I was going through as a caregiver for my father. It'll never see the light of day. And it doesn't need to. It wasn't a great story, but I needed to write it for me and get it out there, and it's out there on a drive somewhere, and it'll promptly be erased probably in the next few months. And there's been others like that. So yeah, I know that feeling. And I think maybe we don't talk about that enough, that, you know, just the act of creating is as valuable as, you know, getting your word out on the printed page.
Plus, it's an intellectual act that mm-hmm. that enlarges yourself as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a form of journaling, you know, as well, just, you know, getting those thoughts down, which, you know, can lead to something maybe later, but then just getting those thoughts down immediately is another process of just, like you said, letting maybe it's not creative, but it is writing, and it can always, like, you know, just be a creative release almost, and just mental release, which is what I think, right, as writers, we're always looking for that outlet to do that.
Yeah. It seems to build up over time, doesn't it? Right. Where you're like, that was the other issue with me, is that I find there's, if I don't do at least two things regularly in my life, I'm going to be a cranky SOB. One of them is exercise and the other is writing. Yeah. And I've discovered that through being a cranky SOB, not by somebody saying, hey, Joel, you need to have creative outlets, and me actually hearing them. I had to find those out the hard way.
Exactly. And I even have a whole book. I have several or books of, like, poetry that I just do for myself. Like, again, those will probably never see the light of day, but maybe it'll turn into something. And you never know. And it's a nice feeling that you know, you're able to put things down to paper, because as writers, that's our goal in general anyway. So,
hey, yeah. Joel, tell us about your latest book. That's absolutely what I want to hear about. Mm-hmm.
It Came from the Trees and Other Violent Aberrations is a collection of five stories. So it's a short collection. Okay. It's 120, 130 pages. I wanted it to be that way because I, you know, I love anthology reading, but I also love things that are short that you can sort of pick up and sort of finish in an afternoon's reading. And so I put that together. It has a novelette as the lead story, which is It Came from the Trees. And then four other stories. They're all united by one theme, which I would say is dread. And I would say, you know, three or four of them are clearly in the territory of horror. One is clearly in sort of science fiction. One is sort of grim, dark fantasy with horror elements to it. So they're all a bit different. They're all borrow elements from my home, which is British Columbia. I love writing about this place and turning this place into a monstrous sort of geography, quite literally. And so what are the stories? I mean, you've got everything in there from parasitic beetles that are basically hunting a crew of tree planters to someone who's dealing with and has invented teleporter technology in the airline industry that wants them dead. And then, you know, even a splatterpunk Western, you know, luckless cowboy who stumbles upon a cult heading towards trying to raise an eldritch god. So they're all over the place. They're all fun. I grew up, you know, reading pulp fiction. I love like Dungeons and Dragons novels and all the different imprints that came out of TSR and Wizards of the Coast. I love Robert E. Howard and H.P. Lovecraft. I love all the comics that used to be on the spin racks way back when, you know, in the 80s when I was a kid. And so that's what I like to write now. It's such a departure from my day job. And so I'm really just trying to pen tales that, you know, are page turners. I'm not looking for great literary achievement here rather just people that say, oh, that was a fun story. I remember that one. And so that's what it is. A collection of five stories and hopefully, you know, one or two people like it.
I think that sounds amazing. That sounds right up my alley because I love stuff like that. Just, you know, I'm a big horror fan too. So I just, can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you besides the comic books? Maybe just, what is your process? Are you walking around? Are you just like, you know, jotting the outlines or what?
Yeah. So, well, let me just start. So I see Amy and Valerie, you're both horror fans. So, hey, yes. Right on. Yes. I feel like we're always in the minority. People think when I tell people in my day job that, oh, you write, I'm a writer. And so, oh, what do you write? I write horror. They always kind of give me this look like, you know, I'm one step removed from, you know, writing erotica or something, which also there's nothing wrong with that too. Anyway, so where do the ideas come from? So the novelette, It Came From the Trees, popped up. I did a writing weekend by myself to a cabin a couple hundred kilometers from our house here in Prince George a few years ago and wanted to write something that was based in the wilderness of Northern BC. Mm-hmm. And reflected that, you know, logging and forestry is still a major, major part of our economy. And so I had been years ago. So X-Files was filmed in the town that I grew up in, which is Vancouver. And there's the first season, there's this episode called Darkness Falls. And it's about loggers who cut down trees. And then there's this almost like a mosquito that starts to spin people up into cocoons. Mm-hmm. And that episode scared the shit out of me when I was a kid and it never really left my head. And so I was away on this weekend and I was writing a story. I'm like, well, why don't you use that as inspiration? Mm-hmm. But twist it a little bit, change it around. So there's elements of Alien and The Thing and Darkness Falls all into this novelette about silviculturists who are trying to just survive their tree planting season up in Northern BC. The other stories like a 21st century D.B. Cooper, it was born out of this idea. My day job is economic development and economics. So I'm on that side of nerdyism, sort of Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And I had this question because I'm a big Star Trek fan. You know, what would actually happen if somebody invented teleporter technology? Like not in terms of like moving people around and everything, but what's the economic impact of that immediately? Who would lose? Because a lot of people would win, but who would lose? And the obvious answer to that was the airline industry. As soon as you have teleporter technology, there's no need for an airline industry anymore. Mm-hmm. And so then the story was born out of that. Well, what if you had a researcher that, you know, invented this and it hadn't gone to market yet. And there was an airline industry that basically wanted to buy and shut down the technology. And what if he refused? And so that's the story. And it climaxes with, if you know, the D.B. Cooper story out of the Pacific Northwest, it does climax with a leap from an airplane at the very end. So the stories typically, you know, they pop into my head at random times. I've talked to other writers. I think it's very much the same for them. Sometimes you sit down with an intent to try and come up with something, but a lot of times it's just like, oh, that's an interesting question. And then I let it float around in my head for a while until it starts to take form. And then I attempt to actually turn it into something that's structured and readable. But I'd be interested in hearing about your own approaches to this, all three of you, if you're willing to share, because I could learn something. I'm still very much at the beginning of this journey as a fiction writer.
Well, so I'm not a writer on this one. I live through you guys, so I can't help you on that. But
she's
Russell
a promoter.
And Valerie can. Yeah,
she's a promoter.
I'm the person that likes to have a lot of fun with your books and let other people have fun too. You guys put all the blood, sweat, tears, and I'm sure that there are a lot of tears that go into a lot of books and blood sometimes. Okay, there's sometimes that happens.
Russell has blood. Russell has blood.
And I believe in blood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, Russell, are you on your third book with murder?
Yeah, but I really connect with Joel about this particular thing. And that is, Joel says, not everything that you write is either going to be published or should be published. Because my first novel was so bad, it can't even be fixed with a rewrite. I mean, it's so bad. So I completely, and it'll never be published. So I completely understand. I do want to know where you got this continued theme of dread from. Are all these stories, number one, part of the same universe? And number two is why dread? Have you examined your own psyche to see why is dread a theme that keeps coming to my subconscious?
Well, that's a really good question, actually. I'm going to attempt to answer that and probably fail in the process. Why dread? Okay, so the first question was, are they in a shared universe? They're not. So in It Came from the Trees, that's contemporary. That's like 2021, 2022, Prince George and area. 21st century D.B. Cooper, same period, but different universe, same city, same setting. The Silent Screamer, same period, but that's actually in London. And then the fourth and the fifth, one is a fantasy world that is the first story I've ever written in that fantasy world. I'm quite hopeful that I'll be able to write more in it. And then the fifth is actually a sequel to a story that was published in an anthology I was in last year from Bridget's Gate Press. It was a splatterpunk Western anthology. It was the first time I had ever written a Western, and I loved it. I love Westerns. And so I wanted to go back and write another one, and I think I'm going to keep going with that character over time. So they're all very different. But why dread? There's something that's scarier to me about being scared than the actual moment that something occurs. Like when something bad occurs in life, someone dies, or like you get into a fight, or there's an accident, there's a banality to it. And I think you feel the fear and the terror after the fact if you survived it. But there's a bit of a banality to it. Not to discount that. I think you do have to have those moments and stories. But there's something far worse in the anxiety and of dread, of feeling that something bad is happening, that you are being drawn inexorably into a situation that is getting worse and worse, and you are rationalizing as you go. And even though there's really no way out of it, you just keep getting drawn in and drawn in and drawn in. And I think that has been a theme in my writing, where I'm creating worlds or situations where it doesn't really matter what the character does. Things are going to get awful. And that moment when they begin to realize this is, that to me is terrifying, because you don't know the outcome. You don't know if you're going to survive it. You don't know if you're going to come through it. You don't know if your friends are going to survive it. All you know is that you're about to head into this situation. There's no way out of it. Okay, here we go. And so that idea of dread really appeals to me. And I think it comes back to this idea at this stage in my career. People always say, you know, write what you know. And write what you're scared of, what scares you. And so those are two things I would say, and I have some experience with in my life. And so, you got another person joining us. Yeah. I think that's what I'm exploring.
Well, so, okay. So yet again, I'm not a writer. I live through you guys. But my question is, if you write about things that scare you, right? I mean, I'm sure it's like your own way of kind of facing these things. Is that harder for you to write because it's one of those things that scare you? Like, if I were to write, like, my biggest scare in the whole wide world, and, like, this is me being vulnerable, but is, like, going in my attic and, like, something I pull out, like, covered in spiders, right? And you don't know it until you pull it down, and then it's like, and, like, Black Widow spiders, you know, to say the least. So I don't know if I could write a story of like something that happens to somebody. To me, that would be really difficult. I mean, it would be facing my fear, right? So is that difficult for you to write from that point of view, or do you just really enjoy that angle of it?
Well, in anything I've ever written, there's always been two fears going on. There's, and they're in parallel to one another. There's the fear of whatever the character is dealing with emotionally. And okay. They're very real things that we would find in this world. And those are the things that truly terrify me. That's like losing a loved one, losing a child, being diagnosed with a disease, coming to the realization that you're not a good person, that you've made mistakes, right? That you, or that you maybe don't have the ability to change who you are. You're going through a troubled time. So there's that fear, which I think is a universal fear. And then layered on top of that in my work is also then a very physical present fear, which might be, and in the case of this latest book, the fifth story is a giant spider. And spiders scare the heck out of me too. I find the monsters easier to deal with because they're not real. Mm-hmm. And you can get into the physicality of that in the story quite easily. And I actually quite enjoy that. So that to me is, I try to make that as terrifying as I can, but terror is different for everybody. So like, that's like throwing darts in a black room kind of. The piece that I am dealing with that's truly, I think over time is those issues that individual is dealing with. And so in a story I had published last year, Hands, it was the death and the continued resurrection of their daughter. Right. Which is just awful. Like I can't.
Terrible.
Yeah. How do you get it? That to me is what is truly terrifying, but I also want to have a supernatural element. So I try to bring those things together. I will admit there's places I won't go. Right. Yeah. For me either, because
Will you not go?
Really, really violent stuff that you would see in our world. That is like everyday stuff.
I
don't think I've got a place writing about sexual assault. Like I just don't.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so I'm not going there. I won't, you know, there's, you know, horrid crimes and things. I know some people will write stories quite effectively about serial killers and I applaud them for that. That's not an area that I can tread in. It hits a little too close to home in some ways. And so I don't have the guts to go into that, and I will applaud other people that do. So usually it's the psychology of dealing with loss or an impending loss of, you know, a loved one or a realization about yourself married with, you know, some type of a physical manifestation of that, which would be a monster. That's where I'm at right now.
I like it. That's a good explanation, because I think I'm with you. Like, I can't write about those things, especially because I have really young kids. I definitely can't get in the headspace to do those things, you know? Yeah. So, but I like it. I like it.
Joel, too, I think the theme of dread is just, it builds up the suspense for all those stories you were talking about. And that's what really, you know, contributes to the horror factor, because if it's not putting you on the edge of your seat, then what, you know, that's like the whole impetus of a horror story. So I applaud you.
Oh, well, thank you. I think you're right. It took me a long time to realize that. Like, I was in the beginning when I was writing fiction as an adult, when I got back to it, I'm like, well, all these people are making really sound decisions all the time, and the conflict is kind of not happening because they're just reasonable, well-adjusted people. And I was like, okay, that's not, what am I missing? And then it's like, well, actually you need to create flawed people. You need to create people that make decisions that are other than what you would make or a sane or reasonable person would make. And then ask the question, well, why are they making those decisions? Yes. Right? What led them to do that? Because that also needs to be rationalized too. Mm-hmm. It was only when I really realized that I was able to get into it. Because prior to that, I was writing, you know, stuff that really had no conflict. There was no dread, no, you know, no suspense whatsoever. And it went nowhere, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you guys, we are coming to a close on our show. So let's do last minute comments, questions, statements before we wrap up. Russell, I'm going to go to you first today.
I think Joe needs to tell the listeners of our podcast where they can find his books and what their names are. Would you do that, Joe?
Yes. Do you want me to wait until everybody's had their turn?
I want you to do it right now.
Okay. So you can find me on Amazon. Just search Joel Mackay. I don't think there's anybody else out there with that name right now. You can find books. You can buy my novella that was out last year. And then this one is already up in pre-order. And then if you Google me, you can find me on LinkedIn, Threads, Instagram, and Twitter. And usually that's where you can find out about my latest work. Thanks for the prompt, Russell. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really enjoy meeting you, Joel, and just hearing about the whole upcoming stories, because I think they sound intriguing.
Thank you, Valerie. It was a pleasure to meet you as well.
Hey, well, Joel, we appreciate you coming and joining us, even with technical difficulties, which is the sound of, you know, all of us can relate to that 100% and taking time out of your morning to come and hang out with us. It's been a fun conversation. I'm excited for your books because I am your target market. So I am heading over to Amazon and checking them out right now. But Joel, you're welcome back anytime you have a new book. This has been a really fun conversation. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for putting up with my technical difficulties. It's greatly appreciated.
It's all good. But everybody, we hope you all have a fantastic Monday, a great rest of the week. And until next Monday, bye for now, everybody.
Bye.